U.S. businesses thrive on Alibaba's online marketplace, where sales by American companies to Chinese consumers added $53 billion to the U.S. economy in 2022. Discover more at AlibabaPowersBusinesses.com.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
After the tragedy in Waukesha, Wisconsin over the weekend, and more looting in San Francisco, is the debate on criminal justice beginning to turn? Welcome, I'm Kyle Peterson with the Wall Street Journal. We're joined today by my colleagues, columnists Bill McGurn and Kim Strassel. The horror over the weekend was at a Christmas parade in Waukesha, a town of about 70,000 on the outskirts of Milwaukee, and a driver of a red SUV plowed through the crowd, killing five, injuring dozens, including 18 children, 10 of whom went to intensive care at the hospital. The suspect, Daryl Brooks Jr., 39 years old, is in custody. His motivations were not clear as of the latest I've seen. The local police chief said there was not a police chase involved. There was no sign that this was terrorism. So we will doubtless learn more in the coming days, and maybe that will change. But there's been a lot of debate, Bill, about the fact that Brooks was out on a $1,000 bail. He was released from jail last week after allegedly running over a woman with his car on November 2nd. The quote from the criminal complaint they're going around is, officers observed tire tracks on her left pants leg. And after something like that, Bill, the question is, why would you be out of jail?
Yeah, well, that is the big question. I think even the DA's office is now saying it's investigating and admitted that the bond, $1,000, I believe, was way too low. Look, this is a large problem today. It's not only that we have criminals committing acts, but when they're caught, they're not prosecuted or they're let out on bail. And while they're out on bail, they victimize other people, other innocent people. I think there are a lot of hard questions about whether those people that were run over by his car really had to die. You know, if the criminal justice system were doing its job. You know, sometimes they let them out because you have right to a speedy trial, and if they don't think that it's going to be speedy, they let them out, and that kind of mitigates that complaint that they have against them. But we need to make sure there's punishment, because the bad guys have figured this out. All the things you're talking about, Kyle, you know, the shoplifting, the attacks on stores, the bad guys have figured out they can do this with impunity, and they're going to do it. People get those signals very, very quickly, and you don't have to have a law degree to get that signal.
I'll read a piece of the statement from Milwaukee County District Attorney John Chisholm. He said, the bail recommendation in this case is not consistent with the approach of the Milwaukee County District Attorney's Office toward matters involving violent crime, nor was it consistent with the risk assessment of the defendant prior to setting of bail, unquote. And so, Kim, as Bill says, he says he's going to do some investigation, and I suspect state officials, state lawmakers may want to do some investigating of their own.
Yeah, well, he says that now, okay? But that's a statement that qualifies as covering your backside, because here's John Chisholm back in 2018 when he sent out a tweet congratulating the retirement of a district attorney in San Francisco. He called him, quote, a pioneer in prosecutor-driven justice reform, end quote. And that's what we're really talking about here. For a number of years, we've been having this debate about criminal justice reform. And it started with the argument that you had nonviolent drug offenders who were spending too long in jail, and we can have that discussion and that debate. And Congress did, and actually passed a bill aimed at that. But there are district attorneys around the country who, and as part of the entire sort of racial justice argument that's been going on and pushed by the progressive left, decided that they were going to unilaterally push this agenda. And that's why that line matters: prosecutor-driven justice reform. And they've now applied it to basically everybody. And so you look at this suspect in Waukesha. He was in court on November 5th, and he was there for reckless endangerment, battery, domestic abuse, resisting arrest, and bail jumping. And somehow he gets out with $1,000 bail. And he's got a rap sheet that, according to some news outlets, and the Wisconsin Department of Justice, is more than 50 pages long, that goes all the way back to 1999 with his first felony conviction. And in the past, he'd been charged to higher bails to get out on some charges. He had complained. His lawyers had complained. Clearly, the system just decided they didn't want to deal with him. And now here we are. But this is happening across the country with district attorneys who are deciding deliberately simply to not prosecute offenders, to drop charges or to minimize their sentences. And we're seeing the results.
And on one side of the spectrum, I mean, bail, I think, can be a hard question, particularly with some of these nonviolent offenders, drug offenders. It's difficult to predict how likely somebody is to reoffend or commit a worse offense while they're out. And there's also concerns about taking people who are nonviolent and hardening them, having them do time in jail where they are losing their job, cutting their ties with their communities while they're in there. Does that make them more likely to reoffend? And with respect to the DA in Milwaukee, John Chisholm, the Washington Free Beacon dug up this interesting quote about him in 2007, and he's talking specifically about drug offenders. And here's what he said. Is there going to be an individual I divert or put into treatment program who's going to go out and kill somebody? You bet, guaranteed. It's guaranteed to happen. It does not invalidate the overall approach, unquote. And I understand the point he's making there, Bill, and it's the same problem with the executive pardon power. Presidents, governors, their incentive is to not really pardon anybody until the last 2 weeks when they're in office, because if any of those people they pardon go out and commit a serious, heinous crime, the responsibility and the political backlash is going to come to them. On the other hand, with the person we're talking about, in this case, Brooks, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, says in 2020, he was charged with three felonies after being accused of firing a gun during an argument with a relative. And then he allegedly ran over a woman on November 2nd. And so this seems to me, Bill, on the far opposite side of the spectrum.
Yeah, look, in this particular, you know, we can make theoretical cases about individuals locked up that shouldn't be and so forth. In this case, a kindergartner would know this man does not belong on the streets. You let him out on the streets and you're just going to see other people who get hurt. And that's exactly what happened. And there are a lot of cases like this. We can't detach this case from the larger kind of societal movements now about defund the police, the idea that the police are illegitimate themselves, they shouldn't be out there making arrests, and the, you know, so-called bail reform, which is about, you know, keeping people out of jail. You know, in all this, what we really need are judges and district attorneys with judgment, with good judgment. There's no substitute for good judgment. And you should be able to look at the individual facts of the case. Yes, maybe somebody who doesn't have a big record and so forth goes there and he gets out and he hurts someone after he gets out. And you wouldn't have known that from his rap sheet. But you can't argue that in this case. I mean, what we're seeing is just a wholesale defiance of the law. And in places like New York, you know, where I live, you know, I remember the bad old days. I remember the days in the 70s, you know, when the subways were taken over, you know, Clint Eastwood was making Dirty Harry movies because of the crime. It was a national issue. And the police department showed we can handle crime. We can drive it down. We can mostly solve it. But you have to back us up. And that backing has been taken out, certainly was not there with Bill de Blasio. And you could see the result. And we see this all over the place, you know, in Seattle, in Portland, in Kenosha, and so forth, where we don't back the police trying to do their jobs. And the result is a lot of innocent people are paying for that.
Hang tight. We'll be right back. You're listening to Potomac Watch from The Wall Street Journal.
U.S. businesses thrive on Alibaba's online marketplace, where sales by American companies to Chinese consumers added $53 billion to the U.S. economy in 2022. Discover more at AlibabaPowersBusinesses.com.
From the opinion pages of The Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Welcome back. At the same time over the weekend, Kim, there was amazing footage from the Bay Area, or I should say more amazing footage from the Bay Area of looting stores. Dozens of people went into a Nordstrom, stole merchandise on Saturday night. 80 people rushed into the store. One employee was pepper sprayed. Reportedly, it was all over in about a minute. And the police are saying it was obviously a planned event. It's being called kind of a flash mob looting. In San Francisco's Union Square, there was a Louis Vuitton store with windows smashed in. People running out with arms full of merchandise as much as they could carry. And Kim, I mean, it's remarkable that we're seeing this footage. On the other hand, this is the kind of footage we've been seeing out of San Francisco for a long time now.
Yeah, another word that they're using for it is organized retail crime. And they're now hitting these fancy luxury department stores. But you ask any business owner in San Francisco, someone who owns a pharmacy or small businesses, this has been going on for a long time, just reckless looting. And this has put a lot of attention on the DA out there, Chayza Boudin, and there's now a recall effort against him. But this also gets into the discussion we were just talking about. There was a quite remarkable story on NBC News about how the San Francisco supervisor, Catherine Stefani, is now pushing legislation that would require the DA to regularly release data about how often it reduces or lessens or drops charges. And one of the statistics they had in there in this NBC story was, according to San Francisco police records, officers made 131 arrests for felony domestic violence during the fourth quarter of last year. Those cases involve injuries, weapons, and children. The DA's office, however, dismissed 113 of those cases, 86%. And, you know, these are for felony domestic violence crimes. You have to imagine that the folks that are being brought in, if they are even being brought in on robbery, theft, vandalism, aren't even facing at the threat of any charge at all, or just being put through the revolving door and sent right back out. And San Francisco wonders why it has a problem. And of course, although they this is becoming a big issue, and that is why you're now seeing this recall effort.
Yeah, the recall was certified this month. And so Chayza Boudin is going to be on the ballot in June. And one of the people driving the recall effort is a former prosecutor in the DA's office who resigned. Here's something she said recently. It's my perception that Chayza lacks a desire to actually and effectively prosecute crime in any fashion. While he ran on a platform of being progressive and reform-focused, his methodology to achieving that is simply to release individuals early or to offer very lenient plea deals. And recently, I think in the last few days, this group pushing the recall effort, San Franciscans for Public Safety supporting the recall of Chayza Boudin, has done their first ad buy. And here's a clip of what they're saying.
I didn't support the Newsom recall, but this is different.
Chayza takes a very radical perspective and approach to criminal justice reform, which is having a negative impact on communities of color.
I never in a million years thought that my son, let alone any six-year-old, would be gunned down in the streets of San Francisco and not get any justice.
So doubtless, Chayza Boudin will have a response to that ad. And who knows how this campaign will play out. It's a long way from June. But Bill, it seems like this will be a recall to watch as we try to figure out where the public debate on this issue is going.
Yeah, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that he's already beaten back one recall effort. But now the situation has changed. I saw a banner over a shop. I assume it was in Chinatown because it also had Chinese lettering underneath, and it said, "This store closure brought to you by Chayza Boudin." So I think, you know, the situation has changed, and we'll see. He's threatening indictments, but you know, not to be Clint Eastwood, but you have to ask yourself, if you're in San Francisco, are you feeling lucky that you have Chayza Boudin as your district attorney? And in fairness to him, he's just one of a lot of district attorneys around the country that have bought into this, and many of them were elected. And the citizens are now bearing the consequences of their election choices. So we'll see if it's changing. I mean, you see in New York, Eric Adams, you know, former New York City police officer, African-American, Democrat. You know, he won solely on the crime issue. You see in Detroit, another African-American, James Craig, former police chief there, now running for governor. You do see a backlash of people coming. And look, the general thing is Americans are very tolerant, but they don't like crime. They don't like watching their stores looted and closed down. And they don't like, you know, a world in which bad guys run amok. And so maybe now we're beginning to see the beginning of a backlash. You know, a lot of Democrats in Congress complained the last time how the endorsements of crime and criminal behavior by the Democrats, the soft on crime, almost cost them their congressional seats, you know, with the defund police. Now I think it's just much more vivid who's being victimized by this. So I think it's going to be a big issue next year.
On the point about store closures, I mean, I think that's a huge deal, and it makes cities, San Francisco, less livable. And Walgreens is a big one. Walgreens is closing another 5 stores across San Francisco. One of those stores was the site of a viral video this summer. There's a guy in the aisle with his bike. He's filling up a garbage bag with merchandise. He gets on his bike and he just rides out the door. And Walgreens issued a statement last week. I'll read part of it. Retail theft across our San Francisco stores has continued to increase in the past few months to 5 times our chain average. It goes on to say we increased our investments in security measures in stores across the city to 46 times our chain average in an effort to provide a safe environment, unquote. And clearly that didn't work because they're continuing to close down these stores. And Kim, people are going to be mad. People can be mad at Walgreens when their neighborhood pharmacy disappears, the place they used to go to walk to get their prescriptions. Now they're going to have to transfer somewhere. Maybe it's farther away, but it's a really hard problem because what is Walgreens supposed to do here?
Yeah, you can't blame them because of the double whammy that you just cited. On the one hand, they are losing money. You know, a lot of retail, whether it be pharmacies or other types of retail, that they don't operate on huge margins. So when you're talking about that amount of theft, you're basically opening your doors every day so that you can hand away your cash. You're not bringing anything back. But then there's also the safety aspect. Look, they have to be responsible for their employees working in these jobs. And you've got a situation where the police are not doing the policing. And so they're having to supply more of their own security. But that's a little bit of a dodgy prospect. So yeah, they're going to shut down. And this is, I think, why you're beginning to see cities, not just San Francisco, but other areas that are putting a new focus again, like Bill mentioned with Eric Adams in New York, because once the businesses start to go, it's a double whammy in that the place becomes less livable. Suddenly, it's really hard if you live in this neighborhood to go get that prescription you need filled. But also remember, these businesses are drivers of tax revenue in cities. They are the folks that write the checks that allow all the other dollars to be sent that politicians like to spend. And if they're all going to start closing down, which you're seeing across the country, then you're going to have a political environment in which there is a recommitment to law and order.
One last thought on the stores front. There's a fascinating Wall Street Journal article from September. And it describes a thief in San Francisco at a CVS taking $1,000 of allergy medicine, putting it in a trash bag, taking it out to his car, doing the same thing at 2 other nearby stores. And then the article says this: he was part of a network of organized professionals known as boosters, whom CVS had been monitoring for weeks. The company believed the group responsible for stealing almost $50 million in products over 5 years from dozens of stores. And they would then allegedly resell them online, usually a lot of them on Amazon's retail platform. And Bill, I mean, I get that crime is a local issue, but when you start talking about $50 million in products taken off shelves in Northern California and sold online, presumably to people not only in California, but across state lines, you know, that starts to sound like something that the FBI might be taking an interest in.
Yeah, it certainly does. Look, it goes back to my point. Criminals may be crude and unsophisticated and uneducated, but they're not stupid. They figure out weaknesses. They spend all their time trying to find vulnerable points, and they figure out weaknesses and they act accordingly. And so it's not surprising to me now that they're becoming organized in how they attack these stores, so they come away with not just a pocket full of goods, but a lot of things. And of course, the rest of us pay for it. We either pay in higher prices, or we pay in that our Walgreens or CVS that we used to rely on is shut down. But we all pay for it in some ways. And the video footage is almost clownish. You watch people going into stores and just waltzing out with the shopping cart filled with goods that they've stolen. And I just think Americans are sick of it.
One last data point here is on the police funding front. The headline in the Associated Press last week is Portland among U.S. cities adding funds to police departments. Kim, Portland. And it goes on to quote the mayor, Ted Wheeler. He says, many Portlanders no longer feel safe, and it is our duty as leaders of the city to take action and deliver better results within our crisis response system. So, I mean, if you're talking about a turn in the debate over criminal justice, it's hard to think of a better example than the mayor of Portland, Oregon, lauding $5 million more to the police department.
Yeah, just on a personal note, I grew up in Oregon, outside of Portland, but when I have gone back since last year to visit, it's just the city's just in a terrible situation, and it's not just all the crime and the rioting and the looting, but you know, incredible camps of homeless people, tent cities all over. You know, it's been extraordinary to watch what's happened to that city. But by the way, fascinating how quickly now they are again calling for it to be restored, because during last year's protests, there was this demand by progressives to cut $50 million from the police department's budget and to put that money into community-driven initiatives instead. They didn't get all of that, but the city council did cut $15 million, which is, think about it, that's almost a third of the budget. And an additional $12 million was cut as a result of economic shortfalls, they said. They blamed it on the pandemic. But again, it goes back as well, too, to all the businesses that were boarding up their shops and not opening and lockdowns as well. And as a result of all of these cuts, there were massive layoffs in school resource officers and transit police, and importantly, a gun violence reduction team. And now, guess what? Seeing some of the results. And it's good news that they want to put money back into this, although I would note that they're basically talking about increasing the budget by an additional $5 million. That gets you nowhere near back to what the police department was prior to all of this beginning.
Well, Bill, we'll give you the last word here, and I'll set you up. The old joke is that how do journalists count? And it's 1, 2, 3 trend. But I'm above three here. First, we have Eric Adams, former cop, being elected the mayor of New York. We have Minneapolis voters rejecting that referendum in November to replace their police department. We have Portland adding more money to the police department. We have the San Francisco prosecutor saying he's really going to go after these people who were looting that Louis Vuitton store. And maybe we will have some reaction in Wisconsin to the Waukesha bail issue. And so, Bill, I mean, do you think there's really a change in the tenor of the debate here?
Oh, definitely. And, as we pointed out before, a lot of these cities elected the people like Bill de Blasio and so forth and Chase Boudin that are now giving them problems. But I'm not sure they realize fully what they were getting. You know, if you're talking about bail reform, I'm not sure people interpreted that to mean that really bad guys would be let out on the streets and not prosecuted. Now people are realizing it. As I said before, I think it was an issue in the 2020 campaign, not so much at the presidential level, but at the congressional level. And I think Democrats are in real trouble with this because first of all, most of these cities are Democratic cities. And if you can't protect the people, and worse than that, you seem to be siding with the criminals over individual people, honest citizens and their stores and so forth, I think people are starting to realize it and they're reacting. People, I mean, it's not a great secret. People don't like crime. And if you look like you're excusing it or abetting it, they're going to vote you out if they get the chance.
Thank you, Bill and Kim. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back later this week with another edition of Potomac Watch.
U.S. businesses thrive on Alibaba's online marketplace, where sales by American companies to Chinese consumers added $53 billion to the U.S. economy in 2022. Discover more at AlibabaPowersBusinesses.com.